This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
By the Book on BFM 89.9.
Hello, everyone. You are listening to By the Book. I'm Lee Chui Lin. And with me today, my fellow lover of books, good words, fiction, all the rest of it, Sharmila Ganesan.
Thank you.
And I mentioned lover there because today...
And in that tone, lover.
Lover. I'm trying to get to that old school radio voice. This one's for the lovers because we are doing a Valentine's show. So happy Valentine's Day in advance, first of all. I suppose it's become a sort of Valentine's week kind of deal. And so, yeah, we just wanted to talk about books that kind of managed to capture that feeling, I suppose, of falling in love.
Well, I think, you know, how can we not talk about books on a book show when it's books about love on a book show when it's Valentine's week? There's the entire genre is dedicated to love and romance and, well, erotica. And so there's so many permutations of this big, fuzzy, grand feeling that we feel. And so many of us learn about it for the first time from a page.
And I think we've spoken before about how books are essentially, in many ways, empathy machines, right? They create a sense of connection to characters, to stories that you might not otherwise feel. We've both spoken about why fiction is so particularly appealing to us. We remember our nonfiction reading New Year's resolution, but in the meantime. And so I think that you're right. Love is a particularly interesting one to talk about, mostly because I think it is such an intense emotion, which makes it very sort of very fertile ground for storytelling. But at the same time, it is difficult to write love well. I think that that is an incredibly underrated skill.
And I also think that for so many people, especially for readers, the reason that their first understanding, experience, imagining of what love could be or what might be, the reason it happens with a book is because it's so intimate. Unlike watching it on screen where you're very attached to what something looks like, with a book you can imagine and it's almost like it's in your head. And with the best writers, you're both a part of that story while also having in some way that story burrow itself inside your brain. And is this the weird, like, I remember so many times just repeatedly falling in love with characters in a book. It may not make a lot of sense, but I will bet that actually there are many readers out there, especially of fiction, who would recount similar experiences.
So I think one of the reasons why romance as a genre of fiction is so wildly successful is because there is a whole group of readers who are constantly chasing that feeling, you know, who are always looking for that emotional investment in the same way that we love soap operas, in the same way that we love dramas, you know. There's a sort of wish fulfillment quality to that, right? It's like, oh, I'm going to get the happy ending. I'm going to be able to see two people make it. This is amazing. But I think what we are talking about today doesn't necessarily fall into that category, the Mills and Boons,
no,
the Judith McNaughts, the, you know, that sort of, you know, the covers. I don't think we're necessarily just talking about that. I think instead it's about how people write about love in other ways and other stories.
And I think that that happens multiple ways. There are stories that aren't about love at all, but that have love stories embedded in them. There are stories that are wholly about love stories, mm-hmm, but then don't necessarily feel that way. I think this idea of feeling in love while reading a book is something that can be quite different for person to person. What one person might perceive as a romance may not be for other people.
Or they might be icked out, right?
Yes.
Because, of course, like I said, it's a hard balance because not everybody wants to read sappy, his eyes were limpid, you know, that kind of descriptor. But at the same time, that's what some people associate. So I think we should just kind of get into it. We are talking today about books that mimic or successfully create that feeling of being in love.
Yes.
Yeah, in light of Valentine's Day, which is coming up soon. So, okay, first choices, Sharmila?
Well, I'm going to maybe start chronologically and talk about one of my earliest exposures, and I think this is something that a lot of teenage girls probably remember, which is that YA, and for me particularly, fantasy genre, where there's always that bad boy who's actually just misunderstood, has lived a hard life. And if I look back, one of the characters that comes out, that sticks out for me, and I still remember, is from this trilogy called Forbidden Game by L.J. Smith.
This, thought Jenny, is a very peculiar place. It felt so cut off from everything outside, as if time didn't exist here or ran differently somehow. Even the dusty sunlight slanting in that one window seemed wrong. A chill went through her. Just concentrate on finding a game, if there's anything here that you can actually play.
Can I help you?
The voice spoke from right behind her. Jenny turned and lost her breath.
I was hugely into the L.J. Smith books when I was, I guess, preteen to early teens. And this particular book was about a board game that a group of teenagers play, and then they fall into the board game and it comes alive around them. And it's sort
Jumanji
of,
style.
I know. So it has everything, really. And then there's, of course, a lead girl who is, you know, your proxy in this world. And there is a Prince of Shadows who, his name is Julian, and he is an ice demon.
Sure.
I know. So this is clearly what classified as someone to fall in love with for me. And it's got everything. He's the mastermind. He's evil at first, but he's also deeply in love with this girl. And the whole trilogy is about how she literally melts down his heart. And I know, you know, as an adult, I'm slightly embarrassed that I'm admitting it, but I was so in love with him. I was so in love with him from the moment I read about him. And honestly, I think that's why writers write these characters. They're written so that young female readers can fall in love with him.
And what's that one called again?
It's called The Forbidden Game.
Of course it is. So, you know, it's interesting that you bring up YA because, of course, we're talking in the realm of intense mm-hmm. crushes and emotions, and nobody feels that as much as teenagers, right? We all know that. We've all been there. And also people write specifically for that. And so I recently meaning I think in the last 5 or so years, read a book that captured that feeling, despite me not being, I suppose, in the target audience. And that was Eleanor and Puck by Rainbow Rowell.
He'd stopped trying to bring her back. She only came back when she felt like it, in dreams and lies and broken down deja vu. Like he'd be driving to work, and he'd see a girl with red hair standing on the corner. And he'd swear for half a choking moment that it was her. Then he'd see that the girl's hair was more blonde than red, and that she was holding a cigarette and wearing a Sex Pistols t-shirt. Eleanor hated the Sex Pistols. Eleanor, standing behind him until he turned his head, lying next to him just before he woke up, making everything else seem drabber and flatter and never good enough. Eleanor ruining everything. Eleanor gone. He'd stop trying to bring her back.
This was published in 2012, and I've spoken about it before, but it was a book that swallowed me whole.
Yeah.
The minute I started reading it, I wanted to know. I was invested in their relationship. I had, you know, all of my fingers and toes crossed that they were going to make it. And it tells the story of these two misfits living in Nebraska, basically mm-hmm. in the 80s. And Eleanor is sort of a chubby, red-headed girl who looks different from everybody else. She wears clothes that she repairs. She wears ribbons in her hair. You know, she does all these things. She isolates herself. And she does that actually because she comes from an abusive household. Mm-hmm. She comes from a household with a stepfather who has increasingly no boundaries for her personal space. She's worried about her younger siblings, you know. So there is that to it. And yet, of course, none of that is known to her schoolmates who bully her, who don't accept her. And then you have Park, who is half Korean, mm-hmm. you know, and mm-hmm. A little bit insecure about his height, a little bit insecure about the fact that he doesn't take after his tall, masculine dad, you know. Instead, he's slight and he's... But they're both incredibly intelligent and funny. And they find their way to one another. And it's also in many ways about Eleanor's liberation from the difficult situation she finds herself in. It's about Park coming to realize that, you know, he doesn't have to adhere to an all-American version of masculinity only. And it's also about what happens when them growing up means separation. So my heart just filled up and broke reading this book. And I felt that 16-year-old flutter again. And I think that's a lovely thing. That's sometimes, as you get, I suppose, older and more cynical, it can be a harder feeling to try and replicate. And this book really did that.
I think you're right that it is more difficult to buy into that idea the older you get, which is why, you know, when we first talked about doing this show, it was actually legitimately difficult for me to think of books that I've read as an adult that captured that feeling for me. Mm. A lot of the adult books I've read have been definitely sadder. So the idea of love or relationships are often tinged with difficulty or pain or trauma. And maybe necessarily so, because we all gather baggage as we get older as well. So when I think of books that have made me feel that way as an adult, actually most of those books have been YA books as well.
But, you know, I don't think it's about the lack of complication in the story. No. I think it's about the lack of complication in the intensity of feeling that the characters have for one another, right? Because, like you said, we all accumulate baggage, but rarely do we just look... rarely, I suppose, do we love as uncomplicatedly as you do when you're a teenager mm-hmm. and writing someone's name in your notebook or, you know, just dreaming about what life could be like in the future and not seeing any flaws. It's just like, no, you are perfect. Mm-hmm. And so I think YA novels, while, for example, Eleanor in Park has all these really difficult subjects, right? Like domestic abuse, child abuse, body image, all these different things surrounding it, those are complicated issues mm-hmm. and they're dealt with really sensitively, but they just love one another. And it's so nice to kind of sit in that emotion and read the book, which is also very well written. So yeah, I mean, today we're talking about books that capture that feeling of being in love. If you're not such a lovey-dovey person, our footnotes might be the section for you. We're also looking forward to that. But let us know, I mean, what was the last book you read that had that feeling, that had you feeling, as the kids would say, all the feels? WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899. Tweet us at BFM Radio. And if you want, you can write to us at buythebook@bfm.my.
Because freedom matters. BFM 89.9.
Hello, welcome back to Buy the Book. You are with Lynn and Sharmila on our Valentine's Day special ahead of Valentine's Day itself. So today we are celebrating books that successfully kind of create that flutter in the belly,
yes.
right? That like create that feeling of falling in love. Again, if you have some favorites that always kind of hit the mark for you, that always do the job, let us know. You can WhatsApp 018-789-8899. You can tweet us at BFM Radio, write to us at buythebook@bfm.my. In the meantime, Sharmila, next up.
Yeah, so we were talking before the break about how I've most often felt these feelings when I'm reading YA books. And one of the ones that in the last few years that I read, and again, it's lined up with what you mentioned earlier about Eleanor and Park as well, which is that they're not simplistic or silly just because they are meant for a YA audience. It's this book called Every Day by David Levithan. The premise itself is pretty interesting. So it's kind of a surrealistic idea of a person who wakes up every day in the body of a different teenager. So 16 years old, has 24 hours in the body and life of the person that they inhabit, and then the next day they're someone else, which has been all that this being knows until one day they fall in love with a young woman that's in the life of that person whose body they were inhabiting. And then this being spends the rest of the book essentially trying to find her.
Right.
So every morning, they wake up in a different person's body and life, and then they try and find her.
I am someone who wakes up in a different body every day. Always someone my age. Never too far from the last, never the same person twice. And I have absolutely no control over any of it. The day that Amy shadowed you at school, I was Amy. And the day that you went to the beach with Justin, I was Justin. It's not possible. It is.
I know it kind of sounds, I don't know whether it sounds flippant when I describe it that way, but it's hugely involving, and you feel so much for this character, for whom, until they met this girl, did not know what love or attachment or ever has never been attached to a person. And then the story kind of flips it as well, because once she knows what it is, she also has to learn to love this being in all of their different permutations, because, you know, through different genders, through different sexualities, through different appearances, through different backgrounds, and learning to figure out that idea of is how different is the person you are inside and the person you are outside. And if there was no connection between the two, would you still love them? And so this big ideas of love and attachment and attraction translated into like a story that may not sound like it's very much, but really affected me a lot when I read it.
Yeah, I think so when I listened to that, I haven't read the book, but one of the things that I like is when somebody takes what sounds like a thought experiment mm-hmm. and actually crafts a good story out
exactly,
of it.
Yeah.
Because it's one of my pet peeves when you read a book and you're like, oh Lord, this is nothing but a thought experiment.
Mm. It's all premise and no substance.
Correct. Yeah. You had a great premise and someone told you that you should write a book, and then someone paid you for that, and then you did the thing that you kind of just developed it in a very linear fashion, right? And that, I think, is almost exactly the opposite of what we're trying to talk about today, where you actually achieve depth mm-hmm. and involvement. I mean, you used the word involving twice, I think, just now when talking about it. And it really does sound like it. And I think a lot of that would be based on identifying with the character.
Absolutely. So, and again, not easy to do, because you're essentially talking about someone who is different every day. So even for you, you're almost in the place of his girlfriend, or their girlfriend, because you're getting to know the person anew every day.
Sure.
So it very good writing. And again, I think something that's much more achievable in that YA genre, because it's free of, in a way, needing to justify a lot, which in a more adult book, I think, would be like, oh, but how did this happen? What is actually going on here? What's the rationale behind this? Which I think YA is sometimes free of.
So I was thinking about how, oddly enough, just like a lot of really good love songs are born out of heartbreak, I think a lot of the books that I think about that fall into this category that we're trying to examine today are books that I pick up in times of heartache, oddly enough. Maybe sometimes just to be able to access, you know, those feelings, mm-hmm. right? And the one that comes to mind that I've always kind of returned to over the course of my life is Jane Eyre. Mm-hmm. And it's one that I've spoken about before, in the same way, I think, that we've talked about, in the same way that Little Women, big thing for us, we mention it a lot.
We're trying very hard not to bring it up in this show.
Or Anne of Green Gables. Yeah. There, we've done it again. But Jane Eyre, of course, by Charlotte Bronte.
You're so little acquainted with men. Keep him at a distance.
You're floating gently in the stream of life, unaware of the rocks ahead waiting to dash you to pieces.
Do you think that because I am poor, obscure, plain and little, that I am soulless and heartless?
Jane! Jane!
It is a book that I read really young. And since then, I've read again, I think maybe 5, 6, 7 times. And it tells the story, of course, of a meek girl who sort of doesn't have a lot of prospects at the start of her life and ends up becoming a nanny, mm-hmm. Ends up becoming a, not quite a nanny, but a tutor of a young girl in a mysterious Bronte sister style country home with a sort of rough man of the house, you know, somebody who you don't fully understand, somebody who seems to have a tragedy in his past and who doesn't really know how to relate to people, Mr. Rochester. And through that, they fall in love and it goes from there. And there's further tragedy lying mm-hmm. in the book. It is overall a very sad book. But when I think about the way that Jane describes falling in love with Mr. Rochester, there is this sense of almost self-negating, which mm-hmm. is a very Jane Eyre quality. She's somebody who, at the best of times, is like, yes, yes, don't look at me. Mm-hmm. But it becomes very much, I would never be apart from you. You know, you can do what you like. You could tell, I recognize that, you know, I'm but a small thing in this grand scheme, but I love you. You can make what you want of that. You know, it's fine. You can do whatever you want. And there is that grand love from a small person mm-hmm. kind of quality to the book that I really enjoy.
So that's the thing about something like Jane Eyre, right? And I love Jane Eyre's book. I loved it when I read it for the first time, again, when I was probably a little too young for it. Because you could argue the whole, yet again, it's an unavailable, emotionally unavailable cold man.
Yes, exactly. And a sort of unassuming
yes.
female heroine.
Yes. But I think what elevates that book and Charlotte Bronte's writing of Jane Eyre is so pivotal in this book is that fact that when she talks about how she falls in love and what she feels, you feel it. It's not like we don't fall in love with emotionally unavailable men. You know, and it might have been a different time. It might have been totally different social structure, whatever. But it's familiar. And it may not necessarily be right. It may not necessarily be what's best for her. But it is familiar.
It's familiar, but it's also heightened by melodrama.
Yes.
Because there is a mystery in an attic. Mm-hmm. There is a dark heart in the book. And there is a moment where they have to be parted simply because that is the only path that she can see forward. And then you have to deal with that as well. Yeah. What happens when this girl was offered everything, everything that she didn't know she could want. And then it was taken away from her. And then they find their way back to one another. And so, look, I am not here to defend Jane Eyre necessarily. I recognize, like you said, that there are elements of it where I'm like, yeah, I know that I'm basically just here saying, just be passive and everything will work out. I'm not saying that that is the only path. I'm just saying that it is a deeply romantic novel.
Oh, absolutely.
It's one that I've always loved.
It's a gothic romance.
It is. Yeah, that's exactly it. I mean, the Bronte sisters do pretty much exactly that genre.
So speaking of melodrama and heightening these emotions, I think actually love works quite well paired with that kind of depiction because on the opposite spectrum of it, I always find it really charming when it's with humor. Mm. And that reminds me of probably one of the defining reads of my early 20s, which was, and I think many women would feel the same way, if not because of the book, then the movie, Bridget Jones' Diary.
Which is sparkly and light
yes.
and really lovely.
Yes, and really at that age when I read it, I so identified with those entries, the tone, the self-deprecation, the pain that lay behind that self-deprecation, but at the same time, the determination to not be worn down by it. And then the archetypal men. You have your Mark Darcy on one side, who is the guy that you think you should be with, but maybe you're not good enough for. And then you have the Daniel Cleaver, who is the obvious jerk who only wants you for his own reasons. And yet you're somehow drawn to, again, emotions that you feel that you identify with and kind of tell you that it's okay that you're in that position as well.
I'm really glad that you brought up Bridget Jones, in no small part because it is a classic romantic comedy, and it is hard to be funny. It just as it's difficult to write good romantic prose, it can be very difficult to write funny, you know? And I think just as it is with comedies, whether it's in movie form or play form or whatever, they are sometimes taken lightly, but they are hard to write. And there are parts of Bridget Jones where I've read it more than... I've read Bridget Jones loads of times. My copies have fallen apart. And I've laughed. I've laughed each time I read them again, you know, because she's just good company and you want the best for her. And I think it's testament to the fact that you love Bridget Jones and you love Bridget Jones and the way she loves, that people wanted to grow older with her, which is what you see in subsequent Bridget Jones novels. She becomes a mother. She knows grief. You know, there are things that that character goes through, and it's all because of that one first novel brilliant setup.
And it's not a coincidence also that I think that that Bridget Jones kind of started that whole... and I don't like this term very much, chick lit genre, because really it's one of the strongest examples of its kind. Since then, the genre, I think, has become quite stereotypical. But I think that as a definitive book of that genre, that did it very well because it understood women. It understood what it was like to be women of a certain age who felt certain things and just needed to feel like it was okay to be that way.
So on that note, what books in your life successfully capture that feeling of being in love? We've come up with a kind of mini list of sorts.
Yes.
If you would like to weigh in, you can WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899. You can tweet us at BFM Radio and, of course, write to us at buythebook@bfm.my. That brings us to Footnotes, where today we are just ending on, I think, the true Scroogey heart of By the Book. Because, you know, when we first talked about doing a Valentine's episode, both of us, I think, were simultaneously interested and repulsed.
Are we really doing this, really?
Yeah, it was, you know, it was a bit of a push and pull. And so now we come to the part of the show where we can wallow and really get comfortable. And that's where we talk about books that... are anti-love, I suppose.
The anti-Valentine's Day
pretty
books.
Much. So if you are somebody who is looking ahead to this Friday and thinking to yourself, bah humbug, or some variation of that, then we got a reading list for you. okay.
Well,
you started the whole show, so please
go
ahead.
Well, I'm going to start with probably the book and movie, both highly recommended, that put me off ever wanting to be in a relationship for quite a long time, Gone Girl by Gillian Flynn.
Yeah.
Everyone told us and told us marriage is hard work. Not for me and Nick. I will practice believing my husband loves me, but I could be wrong. I feel like something to be jettisoned if necessary. I feel like I could disappear. I'd finally realized I am frightened of my own husband. This man may truly kill me.
It's a story of a marriage in which, well, the girl ends up dead. And it's a mystery. But in the course of that mystery, you also find out that at the heart of this, what seemed like a pretty great marriage was a lot of putridity, really. Mm. I mean, and it says a lot about the expectations that are placed on women. It says it has a lot to say about the manipulations that happen when two people who really shouldn't be together end up with each other.
And feel the need to maintain appearances.
Yes.
Yeah.
And so the violence at the heart of the novel really is less violent than the emotional violence that happens in their relationship. If you want to never want to be in a relationship again, if you feel like you never want to be in a marriage, I came out of reading that book just wondering why anyone would bother.
Right?
Yeah.
I completely understand because whoever knows what the other person is thinking or, you know, what they actually are. Because the thing about Gone Girl is it questions what people are and could be.
Who you present yourself to be in a relationship and why you do that.
And you're right. I think at the end of it, you just want to sort of, if there's someone's hand on your shoulder, you just want to brush it off. Just be like, no, it's okay. Yeah. I'm good. Thank you very much. That's a strong choice. So in the same vein, I was hoping that we could find some sort of positive spin on this anti-love thing. But I see that we are both clearly just like deep diving into human horror. And so I wanted to talk about Of Human Bondage, which is a classic by W. Somerset Maugham, who is one of my favorite writers. And in fact, one of my favorite writers who I know to be misanthropic and misogynistic. He's not somebody who, I wouldn't say he just hates women. I don't think he likes people.
Yeah.
So his books have this really awesome bitterness at their very heart. And in Of Human Bondage, that bitterness is pretty forthright. So it is a big book, and it kind of tells the story of Philip Carey and his journey through trying to, I suppose, self-actualize, find love, be happy, grow, all these different things. He is somebody who is an orphan who seeks out affection from his uncle and aunt, with whom he stays at an early age. His uncle is not very affectionate. He wants to be an artist, but he somehow never kind of gets there. And it tells the story of how he eventually finds his way towards being a doctor, all while dealing with this one central relationship for whom he forsakes other good people. And that is a relationship that he has basically with a woman named Mildred, who is a waitress who never even commits to dating him. She dates him, but she also dates other people. He falls desperately in love with her. She abandons him. She abandons him. He gets into other relationships that seem all right, but the minute she comes back with a baby in tow, he's like, okay, Mildred, what do you need? And it is really the story of a toxic relationship. Mm-hmm. Fundamentally, that's what it is. It tells the story of somebody who doesn't seem to know better or doesn't seem to want to know better. And if early on we talked about the positives of that intoxicating sense of being in love, this is the negative. This is what happens when your head never gets clear. This is what happens when you are in love with something that is fundamentally poisonous to you. Mm. It's a great book.
You know, stories of toxic relationships always are. I think there's something sickly fascinating about seeing the total devolvement of something that the two people involved think is love, but everyone who's reading it from the outside can see that it isn't. And I think someone like Mom, for better or worse, is actually able to capture that just because of exactly what you said. He is someone, I think, who sees a lot of the darkness of humanity.
In fact, I would go so far as to say that if you don't have time to read Of Human Bondage, because it's a big book, just pick up a Mom. because he has exactly that. You know, he's a little bit, he's caustic. He's a beautiful writer and an incredibly caustic person. His characters are very brittle. Mm-hmm. And at the end of it, you're like, ugh, I am glad that I'm at home alone tonight. You know, I don't really want to be around people. If you want that quality, if that's what you're seeking out, then I would recommend Of Human Bondage. So, yeah, we've spent this show, I think, really at intense ends of the spectrum, right? From the great highs to the lows where we find ourselves strangely comfortable. So let us know. I mean,
hey, we didn't do it the other way around. We could have spent the first half of the show talking about toxic relationships.
You are absolutely right. And that would have been near unlistenable, but we would have had lots of fun. So let us know what books kind of capture that feeling either of being in love or capture that feeling of, gosh, I never want to be in love again. WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899. You can also, of course, tweet us at BFM Radio and write to us at buythebook@bfm.my.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.